This is A Coastal Story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. Jabez Wolf, the greatest character in the history of channel swimming, and that's really saying something, was a barrel of a man. Photographs show him to have a chest of such dimensions it could have been used as a mould at a bell foundry to produce a resonant tenor. He also had a head so large his hair was too small for it, like a toupee on a beach ball. So large was Jabez Wolf that when he got into the channel, it's a wonder that Archimedes' principle didn't submerge Dover and Calais. He tried and failed to swim the English Channel 22 times. Then he became a popular, successful and outspoken coach to a string of women channel aspirants who queued up for Jabez's services despite some unorthodox philosophies. What little biographical information there is on Jabez. He was born in Glasgow in 1876, the son of a Jewish jeweller from Poland, comes from The Textbook of Swimming, a book he published in the 1920s, capitalising on his fame. It's a slim volume, but comprehensive in its instruction, opening by advising the would-be swimmer to begin by sticking their head in a sink full of cold water. It's in the chapter titled Channel and Long Distance Swimming that we find out a little about how Jabez Wolf became the nation's swimming guru and coach to the Channel stars. He relates a story of winning a long distance race held in a public baths, then taking a central role in a water polo match straight afterwards, leaving the pool feeling as if he still had plenty in him. On his way to the changing rooms, he was collared by Mr. George White, the champion one-armed swimmer, who was among the company present, who informed Jabez that on the evidence of what he'd just seen, he stood as good a chance as anyone of emulating Captain Matthew Webb. Webb had become the first and, at that stage, only person to succeed in swimming the Channel, way back in 1875. That conversation changed Jabez's life, turning it into one dominated by the English Channel. He made his first attempt in 1906, basing himself at Brighton and ploughing between the West Pier and Worthing, before choosing to swim from Dover to Ramsgate Harbour as a warm-up, just as Matthew Webb had done while training for his Channel swim. Jabez reached Ramsgate in no time, but then spent fully 2 hours battling the tides and eddies at the harbour mouth. His resilience aided by a friend of his, a Major Nicol, who kept his spirits up and rhythm regular by playing the bagpipes. He kept skirling away, Jabez wrote, and announced to those with him in the accompanying lugger his fixed determination to blow me inside the harbour. Blown in by a piping major or not, Wolf's persistence paid off and he made it into the harbour after an almighty struggle, one that left him convinced he could not only swim the channel, but do it inside 2 tides. Now it's no great spoiler to reveal that he never made it, not in any number of tides, but it was not through lack of effort or commitment. I certainly ought to have succeeded the first time, he rued, thinking back to July the 18th, 1906, when his fateful relationship with the Channel officially commenced. He'd set out in excellent weather conditions in a calm sea and was going well, clocking up 15 miles in 7 hours. But it turned out he was going a bit too well. Despite nobody other than Webb having ever succeeded in swimming the Channel, Jabez got cocky. I felt very pleased and elated, full of strength and vigour, he recalled, and I suppose that I succumbed to my feelings, I must have spurted up tremendously, for just after this, my left leg gave out. It was less than 4 miles from France, and had been swimming for less than 10 hours when he spurted up tremendously. And at that rate, he was not only set to succeed, but to finish in practically half the time it had taken Webb 31 years earlier. I can't help thinking, even now, that fate served me a scurvy trick by making me pay so heavy a penalty for one or two exuberant, but unwise, if natural, kicks of joy. Scuppered by joyful kicks and tremendous spurting up, Jabez would try again 3 times that summer. Twice before his leg had had the chance to heal properly, and once where his attempt ended when he was overcome by biliousness. In September 1908, Wolfe got as close to the French shore as he ever would. There were just 800 yards between him and the coast before the tide turned and carried him gently back out to sea. If it hadn't been for a thick fog, he insisted, in which he lost his bearings mid-channel, he would have made it ashore on the tide. A 15-and-a-quarter-hour swim against a strong sea and wind, and a sprained wrist and a close view of Calais were all I had to show for it, he sighed. Fortunately, he was never one to let something as inconvenient as failure damage his colossal self-esteem. In the autumn of 1906, barely 2 months after his first failed attempt, he was already touring the country, giving demonstrations as the famous Channel swimmer. He ensured his attempts to cross to France were carried in newspapers across Britain, Europe, and even America. In 1907, he even starred in The Channel Swimmer, a short film showing him being greased up and entering the water that was shown in picture houses across the country. Despite every attempt ending with a grumpy Jabez hauling himself into a boat somewhere between Dover and Cap Grisnez, he was turning himself into the biggest Channel celebrity since Matthew Webb. Where they differed was in how he displayed exactly the kind of relentless appetite for failure that we love in a sporting hero. He was a greased-up England penalty taker, an Eddie the Eagle in trunks, a familiar sight to Devorians each summer, puffing out his massive chest and announcing that this time, he was going to do it. There would be a great hullabaloo at the quayside. Everyone would wave him off as he splashed off towards the horizon to the accompanying squawk of Major Nichols' bagpipes. Then they'd all turn to each other and debate what would thwart him this time. There was that occasion when he packed it in after a run-in with a piece of floating timber, and the shark that had apparently butted him amidships and put him off his stroke, something he regarded as a cowardly act and bad sportsmanship on the part of the shark. Then someone would shout, "Here he comes," as his support vessel brought him back and appeared in the harbour with Wolfe, red-faced and puffy, stomping about on the deck in a dressing gown, railing at the injustice of it all. He might never have swum it successfully, but no swimmer in history had spent as long in the Channel as Jabez Wolfe. What he didn't know about tides and drifts and eddies and jellyfish and what to eat and how often, well, it wasn't worth knowing. All he couldn't advise on was what to do when you got to the other side. He made his last attempt at the age of 47 in 1921, shortly after writing a piece for a local Dover newspaper titled, "Is the Channel Swim Worthwhile?" A question that he was more qualified to answer than anyone. On the eve of the Second World War, he held forth to an interviewer about his Channel experiences. "I swam 600 miles in the Channel during 22 attempts," he mused. "On one occasion I swam 40 miles trying to cross the Channel and missed the tide at the end of it by 5 minutes. I'd have done it that day in July 1914, too. Sea like a mill pond, glass high, tides at their best, the kind of day I'd been waiting for years. Then came the order from the French authorities. War had broken out, and we had to race home at once. Adventures, lots of them. Was nearly run down by a liner while swimming at night. Was bumped into by a bottlenosed shark. Swam through a shoal of mackerel and thought I'd go mad the way they tickled me. And then, of course, there was the time I felt shuddering below the water and my teeth started chattering. The sea itself was vibrating. Couldn't make it out until they shouted a warning from the boat. I changed course just in time to avoid a submarine surfacing. After failing in his final attempt in 1921, Wolfe turned his attention to coaching younger aspirants, notably the women swimmers who came into their own during the 1920s, including Trudy Edderly, whose story was featured in last week's podcast. In that same interview, Jabez was asked about the kind of woman best equipped to swim the channel. The kind of woman who could beat Edderly's record, but still stood. She'd have to be blonde, he said. Genuinely blonde. Brunettes are not stickers. They give in. They're nervous. Blondes are calmer, more stable, better stayers. London girls are no good. I would have nothing to do with London girls. Training for the channel is too monotonous for your London girl. The training lasts for 8 months and includes 1,500 miles of walking, 200 hours of swimming, and 100 hours of massage, not to mention many other hours of exercise. Before training is halfway through, the London girl is crying to get back to what she calls civilization. People who are going to swim the channel have to go to bed early. And my wife will tell you there is nothing more difficult than getting a London girl into bed before 9:30. That is just the time when most of them are beginning to wake up for a few hours of what they call enjoyment. And that was A Coastal Story. And I'm Charlie Connolly. This week's episode is adapted from my book, The Channel, which is published in paperback on June the 23rd and packed with similar stories and similar big characters from both sides of the water. It's published by Weidenfeld & Nicholson, priced $9.99, but you'll probably find a better deal than that somewhere and end up with plenty of change from a tenner.